Penguin Random House Audio presents Tomorrow, Perhaps the Future. Writers, Outsiders, and the Spanish Civil War. Written and read for you by Sarah Watling.
Tomorrow, perhaps the future. But today, the struggle. W. H. Auden, Spain. Today it is Spain. Tomorrow it will be some other country. Julio Álvarez del Vallo at the League of Nations, September 1937. But in Spain, no, perhaps and tomorrow. In Spain, it is here. Nancy Cunard, To Eat Today. Hello, I'm Sarah Watling, author and narrator of Tomorrow, Perhaps the Future. This book cites multiple historical sources and quotations, some of which contain instances of offensive language which we have redacted. Thank you. No perhaps, no tomorrow. Put it this way. An old woman sits alone in a darkened movie theatre and cries uncontrollably. That there is no one seated nearby she considers a mercy, because the room's night-like privacy is necessary to her. The film has triggered her memory so intensely that she feels both as if she is dying and that she is already dead. On the screen, she watches the most important experiences of her life flicker by inexorably and admits to herself that that is what they were. There is no sign of Josephine Herbst in the footage, and yet it shows her most alive. It shows the time when everything mattered. After the screening, she will sit in the lobby and smoke for a long while, mulling over the ways in which history has disappointed her, which is another way of thinking about what her own life has failed to deliver. While she sits there, gathering herself, she is also sobbing over lunch again in Toulouse in 1937, just sitting there, ridiculous, weeping over an omelette her starved stomach is hankering for. What is the street outside to Josephine Herbst? It contains not a single person who could understand the movie she's just seen. It contains nobody who would understand flying out of Barcelona with relief and landing in another country in despair. In Toulouse, it is like being in a nightmare where you are separated from the world in some fundamental but gossamer way that only you perceive. The world goes about its business, and you are cut off by knowing now how little any of it matters, how short a time this peace will last. And by flying out of Barcelona and landing in Toulouse, you have left everything that counts behind. Finally, smoking in the lobby in 1966, she works her way to the truth. She is 74, or in harsher terms, 3 years from death. And the fact is, she writes afterwards, that those 30 years ago, in the most real sense, my most vital life did indeed end with Spain. Nothing so vital, either in my personal life or in the life of the world, has ever come again. And in a deep sense, it has all been a shadow picture for years and years. A different place in time, a more composed woman. Martha Gellhorn is 74 years old and Josephine Herbst is dead, so cannot hate her any longer. Provoked by the young man interviewing her, she stubs out her cigarette and says, I don't even know what you mean exactly by objective. Or take Sylvia Townsend Warner, 1 year younger and exchanging bright literary letters with her editor at The New Yorker. In passing, he mentions his donations to the Spanish Republic 30 years before. Enough, he thinks, to be suspected of premature anti-fascism. FBI code for dangerous communist. Prematurely anti-fascist, she exclaims, reaching out through time and distance to seize a newfound comrade. It soars above all other mortal distinctions. Or picture a grieving woman, 58 years old and 10 months from her death. Virginia Woolf, putting down in her own defence, thinking is my fighting. One final scene. Consider a woman, 64 years old and 5 years from the end, reeling out of Spain under expulsion, not so fresh from several days in jail, and devastated in more ways than one. Raging, she makes her way to England through a series of scuffles and shouts and confrontations. The French police arrest her than the English ones do. On the King's Road in London, they pick her up for soliciting, and then add on drunk and disorderly. She scraps. She throws her shoes at the magistrate. She ends up in a mental hospital. From there, she does what she has done countless times before in the service of any number of causes. With aristocratic presumption, she emits a stream of letters to her dearest friends and to eminent people, between whom there is some degree of overlap, protesting her incarceration. It all goes back, she says, to the Spanish Civil War. In some ways, she's right. Her friends are worried, upset, outraged. Some accept that she has lost her mind, others don't. Nancy Cunard, one will write, was not mad, but maddened. I could go on. There is Dorothy Parker, that famous wit, declaring at the end of Spain's war that there is nothing funny in the world anymore. There is Jessica Mitford on the radio in 1977, choosing as the one record that meant the most to her, an old German anthem, composed in concentration camps, that her long-dead husband learned in the international brigades. There is President Roosevelt admitting in 1939, as Europe accelerated into the Second World War, that not offering support to the Spanish Republic had been a grave mistake. Clearly, Spain mattered. But what's unusual about the Spanish Civil War, which ravaged the country between 1936 and 1939 and brought its young democracy to an end, is how much it mattered to people who had nothing to do with Spain. This is not a book about Spaniards. It is not even really a book about war. This is a book about individuals, outsiders, and how they understood their role in the history of humanity. It's a book about a cluster of people I was drawn to some time ago now. Individuals, most of them writers, for whom the Spanish War and its challenges never lost their force. The writers produced literature during those years that stayed with me, that stays with me still. Poems, memoirs, stories and essays that warranted attention and opened windows onto the late 1930s that had been left boarded up by the male canon I'd inherited. I had been thinking about activism and retreat, responsibility, freedom and solidarity, and about how one might respond to fearful calamities on the horizon. There they were, with their own generation's calamities, their own responses. I might as well admit to a weakness for people with an instinct for rebellion, for women who do not go out of their way to please when more important matters are at stake. Nancy Cunard, Martha Gellhorn, Josephine Herbst, Sylvia Townsend Warner, and Virginia Woolf all resisted in some way the lives they had been offered. The poet, activist, journalist, Nancy Cunard, fought hard to overwrite the heiress muse script drafted by others, emerging unapologetic and determined, heartfelt and erring. Helplessly, I admired Martha Gellhorn's uncompromising, outspoken approach to life and to war reporting, her hard-cased empathy and endless capacity for outrage. I could not resist the radical novelist Josephine Herbst's bad temper, her willingness to scrap, complain and question, to take male grandstanding down with a single swipe at the knees. Sylvia Townsend Warner's self-deprecating drollery, in fiction, journalism and manner, seduced me not least because it came from the pen of a woman so sure, in fact, of her position and its rightness. She knew how her detractors could dismiss her, and she had a disarming ability to take the words right out of their mouths. And who has ever made better use of words than Virginia Woolf? A woman whose curiosity about humanity was endless, and yet bounded by a fear of trespass. Of others into her own intellectual sanctuary, certainly, but also of the imagination into other lives, when so many voices are silenced. The Spanish War began in July 1936, when a group of disaffected generals, including Francisco Franco, who would emerge as their leader, attempted to launch a coup against their country's elected government. The reaction of foreign powers was significant from the start. Fascist Italy and Nazi Germany offered decisive material support to Franco's side, the nationalists, while the Republican government received from its fellow democracies in France, the United States and Great Britain only a queasy refusal to intervene. As the Republic battled to survive this well-resourced attack, relying on a tenacious popular resistance to the military takeover.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?